Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm taking a look at the myths and religions of the world and looking for inspiration for fantasy role-playing games. Today's episode is one of a series of episodes that come between seasons. We've just finished up our season on Hawaiian mythology and we're about to start a season on Tengrism. And in the meantime, I've been talking about little individual topics. I did say I was going to do two more episodes before starting on Tengrism, but just for scheduling reasons, I think that actually I want to get started. So this is going to be the last inter-season episode before we begin our season, which is going to be a pretty short one compared to most of them, on Tengrism, the religion of the medieval cultures of Central Asia, well, some of them anyway, which is making a bit of a comeback today. Today's episode is on a topic that was suggested by Steve Dempsey. Steve asked me to talk about the gods of Pagana. Let me do a quick note on pronunciation. I'm informed, also by Steve, that whether you say the name of the author as Lord Dunsany or Lord Dunsany depends on which part of Ireland you come from. Since I do not come from any part of Ireland, I am just going to say it the way that I have always said it, which is Dunsany. Similarly, I can't find an authoritative source on whether it is pronounced Pagana or Pagana. I had one reader say that it was pronounced Pijana. I am going to say Pagana, but if you say Pagana like they do on Voluminous, the Letters of H.P. Lovecraft, then, you know, more power to you. So let's talk first about the gods of Pagana, like in italics, the book, The Gods of Pagana. It was published in 1905 and written, as I've suggested, by Lord Dunsany. We have spoken before about pioneering fantasy novelist Lord Dunsany. We've covered a couple of his stories, including how Nuth would have practiced his art upon the Knolls in season one of the episode on Knolls, and in a special episode about his story, The Fortress Unvanquishable Save for Sacnoth. And we've also talked about his novel, The King of Elfland's Daughter, in the special episode about hunting. So we've talked about Dunsany before. He is an important influence on D&D. Maybe it would be fairer to say that he is an important influence upon authors who were big influences on D&D. And one thing that he maybe doesn't get enough credit for is, I think the idea of a fantasy pantheon may come from The Gods of Pagana. The Gods of Pagana is essentially a collection of short stories presented as myths or sacred scriptures in this world where the gods of Pagana exist. And that world seems to be our world. So, like, there's Africa and there's, you know, the moon and there's other things that are features of our world, but in a kind of fabulous mythical past. Each of the stories covers one of the deities or one of their prophets or some famous incident or what have you. And then collectively, they kind of form an image of the world of this setting and address a kind of central, I don't want to say philosophical question, but I would say that they have a shared theme. Specifically, they're about coming to terms with the unknowability of the afterlife and the unknowability of, like, divine purpose. And they're written in a kind of a, like a faux King James, faux Arabian Nights kind of style. It's anachronistic, but the thing they evoke for me is Stan Lee. Say faux Arabian Nights, I wonder if maybe it's actually faux the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. I think that some of that is, you know, of the Fitzgerald translation of this collection of poems attributed to 11th, 12th century Persian polymath Omar Khayyam. I wonder if that was a big influence. I think there are some aspects of it. So that's the gods of Pagana in italics. What about the gods of Pagana, if you see what I mean? So the gods of Pagana come in a couple of, like, tiers of deities. At the top, we have one supreme deity, Mana Yudsushai. Mana Yudsushai did not create humans or anything like that, but he did create the other gods. And he is having a nap at present. Once Mana Yudsushai had made all the other gods, one of them, Skarl the drummer, began playing the drum to put Mana Yudsushai to sleep. Now, I don't know about you, but in general, I do not find that someone playing the drums puts me to sleep, but I guess he is playing quite softly. While the original god is asleep, all of the small gods are getting up to mischief, and they're kind of doing things to amuse themselves, and in order to amuse themselves, they created life, and they created humans, and so forth. These gods inhabit Pagana, which is kind of like heaven, but there are lesser gods who include, but perhaps are not limited to, the gods of home, who live on the earth. Now, the gods exist, but they aren't very responsive to mortals. They don't answer prayers, and it seems to be the case that they have created mortals solely for the purpose of amusing themselves, kind of at their expense. They're very much portrayed as being like naughty children, to the point where we're told that when Mana Yud Sushai awakens, he's going to ask them, you know, who made all of this life and so forth, and they're going to sort of like, you know, hold the world behind their backs or whatever and say, oh, it was like that when we found it. And then eventually Mana Yud Sushai is going to kind of like sweep up and get rid of all of creation, and existence is going to end. And this is sometimes presented as this kind of like naughty children being sent to bed, and sometimes as a big epic Ragnarok style end of the world. So having created humans essentially to like play The Sims, the gods are not particularly interested in helping them out. And indeed, there are some instances of stories in The Gods of Pagana where the gods of Pagana intercede on behalf of humans, like where some river deities are causing trouble and the gods of Pagana go in and sort them out. But this is more in defense of the gods of Pagana's own offended dignity. They are upset that these lesser beings are sassing them and causing trouble. The harm that this is causing to humans is not particularly important to them. And this is a recurring theme throughout the book, this idea that people attempt to pray to the gods, and it's entirely pointless, and it's just encouraged by priests who are profiting off of it. Now, that being the case, it seems, at least superficially, that there isn't much that you can get out of this for RPGs, right? Gods who take no interest in the affairs of mortals are not that exciting, particularly over the long term. And the gods of Pagana are not particularly exciting by themselves, especially not once you separate them from the way that Dunsany writes about them, right? In many ways, they are kind of bland. It's the description that you're there to read, or the sort of wry humor of some of Dunsany's writing. But if someone just summarized Kib or Sish or maybe even Mung for you, you wouldn't find them all that much fun. They are very simple concepts made memorable by the style of the description. The book also deals with themes that are maybe kind of outside the scope of the majority of fantasy adventure games. So a lot of this book, at least it seems to me, is about coming to terms with the things that we don't know about our place in the cosmos, about what any higher intelligence might want for us, and also with the thing that we all do know, which is that we're going to die. The philosophy expressed in The Gods of Pagana seems to be a kind of tranquil stoicism or Epicureanism, maybe a little bit like what Lovecraft described as his own gentle nihilism. Of course, Dunsany was a huge influence on Lovecraft. The world beyond is unknowable, and life is finite, and nothing lasts forever. So you should enjoy the beauty of the world around you and not concern yourself with things that are beyond your reach, because all you're doing is making yourself upset. They're going to happen one way or the other. This is okay, but it's not exactly the creed of daring adventurers. But you know, much is made of Dunsany's extensive and obvious influence on Lovecraft. I first encountered Dunsany because he was always being discussed in a Lovecraftian context. But I feel like Dunsany in general, and this book in particular, could be big influences on Jack Vance. I actually have not read that much like Dunsany criticism or even Vance criticism, despite how much I like Jack Vance. So I don't know if this is, you know, probably something that everybody says. But the whole idea of a world where things are futile and enjoyment is the only point, viewed through a more cynical eye, would look a little like the dying earth. And a world where the gods don't give a hang about humankind is the kind of setting where like an enterprising rogue could make a name for themselves, right? So Conan would immediately recognize the gods of Pagana, even if he would feel wildly out of place in italics, the gods of Pagana. But that sense of divine indifference is one that also appears in Conan, and indeed in whichever, is it Queen of the Black Coast, where Conan kind of like outlines his philosophy? That is a muscular version of that same kind of Epicureanism. So perhaps the main thing that we're looking for here is the aesthetics. And of course, this is Dunsany, so we're dealing with someone who's got, like, these are the good aesthetics. You should definitely read The Gods of Pagana. It gets a bit samey after a while, but, you know, story at a time, here or there, appreciating the writing and thinking about its role in history. It's on Project Gutenberg, and you can get it on Kindle for, you know, a pound or what have you. So it's definitely worth it. I could have sworn that I had a paper copy around here somewhere, but if I did, I must have lent it to somebody, because I've definitely got the King of Elfland's Daughter, but I can't seem to find the Gods of Pagana or the deluxe Time of the Gods, which I believe also had the Gods of Pagana in it. I should say that there are other stories about the Gods of Pagana which are not in the book The Gods of Pagana, and I have not read those. So there are a lot of cool images, and we can just kind of go take a look at some of the gods to see what we can swipe. The starter, obviously, is going to be Mana Yud Sushai. This idea of a supreme being that's even above the regular gods adds a little cosmological depth, but at no extra cost to you, because nobody ever interacts with this god, or any of the gods. There's a great bit about how they have, this one culture has what they call the Temple of All Gods Save One, because nobody's even allowed to pray to Mana Yud Sushai. And that's an idea of a central power, like a kind of prime mover, a one above all, if you like, that is familiar from other religious contexts. It's a feature of Gnostic belief, right? So we have a god who created a heaven without life, and then we have lesser divine beings who created life and a physical world, essentially as a kind of act of mischief. That has echoes of Gnostic cosmology. The idea that there is a hierarchy with, like, capital G God at the top and lesser beings beneath is sort of a feature of voodoo, but in voodoo you have profitable interactions with those deities, which is obviously not the case of the gods of Pagana. So even if the only thing I took from this was the Temple of All Gods Save One, I think that's a pretty fun idea. I also like the god of death, Mung, in this setting. I think most people would say that Mung is kind of one of their favorite gods of Pagana. Mung is impartial, sort of. Like, Mung represents a very fatalistic view of death. He turns up when he turns up, implacable and mostly uncaring. And furthermore, he's not that terrible of a figure. People are always seeking to avoid Mung, but actually, it's the seeking to avoid Mung that upsets them. You know, like their problem is that they fear death. And when Mung wants to punish someone, in fact, he refuses to let them die. And again, I think we're seeing here the idea of a kind of Epicurean ataraxia, that we want to have an absence of worry, an absence of distress. That's the real happiness. So the point isn't you fear death, therefore you're going to try and escape death, because you're not going to escape death. The point is to not let your fear of death cause you suffering. So here's an extract from The Deeds of Mung that I think really echoes Epicurean or Stoic philosophy. Part of it really reminds me of parts of the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, where he talks about, you know, you have the time you have, no one promised you any more time than that. Once, as Mung went his way athwart the earth and up and down its cities and across its plains, Mung came upon a man who was afraid, when Mung said, "I am Mung." And Mung said, "Were the 40 million years before thy coming intolerable to thee?" And Mung said, "Not less tolerable to thee shall be the 40 million years to come." Then Mung made against him the sign of Mung, and the life of the man was fettered no longer with hands and feet. And Mung went onward with his work to sunder life from flesh. And Mung came upon a man who became stricken with sorrow when he saw the shadow of Mung. But Mung said, "When at the sign of Mung thy life shall float away, there will also disappear thy sorrow at forsaking it." But the man cried out, "O Mung, tarry for a little, and make not the sign of Mung against me now, for I have a family upon the earth, with whom sorrow will remain, though mine should disappear because of the sign of Mung." And Mung said, "With the gods it is always now. And before Sish, that's the god of time, hath banished many of the years, the sorrows of thy family for thee shall go the way of thine." And the man beheld Mung making the sign of Mung before his eyes, which beheld things no more. Or like in this story of a prophet, Mung turns up, and because the prophet Kabok is going around telling people that, you know, if they offend him, he'll sick Mung on them, and if they please him, he'll save them from Mung, Kabok has reason to think that Mung is upset with him, although he sort of isn't. And for 3 nights, Mung walks in this guy's garden. And when the 3rd night was come, and the bat had gone to his home, and the wind had sank, the night was very still. And Kabok lay and listened, to whom the wings of the night flew very slow. But ere night met the morning upon the highway between Pagana and the worlds, there came the tread of Mung in the garden of Kabok toward Kabok's door. And Kabok fled out of his house as flees a hunted beast, and flung himself before Mung. And Mung made the sign of Mung, pointing towards the end. and the fears of Kabok had rest from troubling Kabok anymore, for they and he were among accomplished things. So here we have this idea that death ends the fear of death. Meng Sign doesn't, viewed from this kind of logical standpoint, Meng Sign is not something to be feared. What's the point? You won't fear after it happens, and there's no point fearing before it happens. Now, this is not the like idea that Dunsany is trying to promote, but I do think that you could come up with a kind of like YOLO reckless adventurer philosophy just based on these same ideas, right? Given that Meng is going to take you when he takes you, and given that after he takes you, you're not going to be worried about it anymore, then you might as well live dangerously. I feel like Epicureanism and Stoicism and other philosophies that promote like self-control and self-understanding typically don't make very good philosophies for fantasy adventurers, because they are all about controlling how you react to your environment and not letting yourself be troubled by strong emotions. The Stoic ideal is to be able to maintain equanimity in the face of bad things happening to you, because you understand that they're not really under your control, but the only thing that is under your control is how you react to them. But by contrast, player characters, ideally we want them to be people who want to control their environment and who are troubled by strong emotions. Another example of this sort of Epicurean thread is Limpang Tung, the god of mirth and melodious minstrels, who seems to take a view, again, suggesting that you should just sort of enjoy life while it happens. So here's a quote from The Sayings of Limpang Tung, the god of mirth and of melodious minstrels. And Limpang Tung said, "The ways of the gods are strange. The flower groweth up, and the flower fadeth away. This may be very clever of the gods. Man groweth from his infancy, and in a while he dieth. This may be very clever too. But the gods play with a strange scheme. I will send jests into the world, and a little mirth. And while death seems to thee as far away as the purple rim of hills, or sorrow as far off as rain in the blue days of summer, then pray to Limpang Tung. But when thou growest old, or ere thou diest, pray not of Limpang Tung, for thou becomest part of a scheme that he doth not understand. Go out into the starry night, and Limpang Tung will dance with thee who danced since the gods were young, the god of mirth and of melodious minstrels, or offer up a jest to Limpang Tung. Only pray not in thy sorrow to Limpang Tung, for he saith of sorrow, it may be very clever of the gods, but he doth not understand." And Limpang Tung said, "I am lesser than the gods. Pray therefore to the small gods, and not to Limpang Tung. Nevertheless, between Pagana and the earth flutter 10,000,000 prayers that beat their wings against the face of death, and never for one of them hath the hand of the striker been stayed, nor yet have tarried the feet of the relentless one. Utter thy prayer, it may accomplish where failed 10,000,000. Limpang Tung is lesser than the gods, and doth not understand." So again, Limpang Tung, like probably the most, one of the two most sort of positively portrayed deities in the whole thing, doesn't understand why there's death, doesn't understand why there's suffering, and just decides to focus on joy, focus on pleasure instead. I do like the way that is expressed as a form of, like, polite, befuddled skepticism. Like, he's sure that there's a reason for it, but he doesn't really know why. In addition to the small gods. So, up top, you've got Mana Yud Sushai. Then you've got the small gods, and below that we've got the 1,000 home gods. These little gods are in charge of small things. So there's a god of petting the cat, for example, but there's also gods of like particular rivers or particular stars. And there's stories about how they fight with the small gods. If you've been around the world of old school gaming for a while, these may make you think of Petty Gods, the book Petty Gods, but I think those are too whimsical even for Dunsany. The point about these guys is that they occupy a tier below the gods of Pagana. They're small scale or local, and that people worship them on a local basis without doubting that they exist. Which is something I think that gets carried into fantasy polytheism from real world monotheism in a lot of games, but that isn't really all that common in polytheistic cultures. The idea of doubting that the gods of your hosts, you know, if you come into a new place and they tell you about Melkart or whoever, and you go, "Melkart's not real." That doesn't seem to be a common thing. Although there are kind of ways of casting the priests of Melkart as a bunch of phonies. That is something that occurs in like ancient literature. So I mentioned the idea that gods don't exist. I do think that the gods of Pagana touches on like a particular type of atheism or agnosticism. Sort of. You know, one of the things that is interesting about it is that it presents a system of deities that is functionally not that different from atheism, right? There are gods, but there's nothing you can do to influence or communicate with them, and they will neither work to harm you nor help you, except perhaps in very extreme circumstances. Like this one time a guy angers Mung so much that Mung forbids him to die, which he doesn't appreciate. But in addition to not really having any power, it's not that they don't have any power, but that they just don't have any engagement. In addition to not wanting to affect the lives of human beings particularly, the gods also don't have any kind of moral authority. They're not good, but they're not evil. They just kind of exist as personalized but impersonal cosmic forces. And honestly, you would be better off just ignoring them. So in terms of daily life, a god that you might as well just ignore and a god that doesn't exist in the first place are much of a muchness. But they don't feel much of a muchness. They feel very different. So the aesthetics are different. There's a certain sense of, one can perhaps think that you might be wanting to have the philosophy and the romantic orientalism of a Gods of Pagana type setting without necessarily wanting to have any of the like gods actually turning up in the game. You know, we want that aesthetic without having to worry about gods all the time. Maybe then Gods of Pagana is a perfect kind of background for a game. You could also definitely do the thing where your, you know, striving, cutthroat, treasure-seeking fantasy adventurers turn up in this, like, Ataraxia-seeking society of diaphanous-robed people who, like, hang out on hillsides in front of Maxfield Parish skies, and the humorous contrast between the outlooks on life that they've learned. Or you could just piecemeal plunder it for little bits of aesthetic detail, which is probably what I'm going to do. But all right, that was The Gods of Pagana. I had not read it before, and now I have read it. And yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff in there, and I definitely feel a little more caught up on my fantasy classics. So thank you very much to Steve for the recommendation. Next time, we are going to take a look at Tengrism, and we're going to get started with the basic overview of what it is and how we know about it. And our sources for medieval Tengrism are pretty limited, so it's going to be an interesting discussion of them. And that's going to be right here on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.